afternoon. It's about 3:35 on Wednesday, and we are reconvening our session from Tuesday, where we recessed, and present are Representative Wohl, Representative Talrico, Representative Stutes, myself, Chair Seaton. We have two items of business on the calendar today. The first is House Bill 345, Insurance Coverage for Contraceptives, and then we will go to House Bill 334, Child Custody. This is our second hearing on House Bill 345. So we did adopt CS at our last meeting. Would the sponsor like to come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt Klayman from House District 21.
Thank you. And are there further questions for the sponsor? Before we go to those questions, I wanted to indicate that we had public testimony last time. We asked people to get in any written testimony. We have received some of the written testimony, including from NFIB, and that's in everyone's packet. And it's also posted on BASIS. And I, were there any other? I don't believe there were any other comments that we received. Representative Talrico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there have been a couple questions posed from several different people to me. And so with the state being an employer, and for any employer, really, they have the ability to set their health benefits that they provide to their employees. So as far as the state is concerned, does this bring state employees under the mandate for the – are the state employees included in this?
Yes. Yes. Matt Klayman, Representative. Yes, they are. That's the intent of the –
All right. So it's for state employees. So, Mr. Chairman, is there any change to the non-Medicaid population in what can be prescribed or the length of prescriptions – or is this an attempt to assure that the payment comes from insurance coverage rather than the individual? So,
do you want to try to answer? Or do you want me to?
Would you identify yourself on the record?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Megan Kavanaugh, staff to Rep. Klayman. Through the chair, Representative Talrico, I think I'm a little confused about the question. If you could just repeat it.
Yeah, I think really what it. I'm sorry, through the chair.
Representative Talrico.
It refers to, there was some language about, on page 2, lines 10 through 12, underneath subsection C, it says a health care insurer may not offset the cost of compliance with A of this section and may not require co-payments, deductibles, or other forms of cost sharing for contraceptives or services covered under A of this section. So I think what it gets down to is people are asking about all insurances that people are covered under, health coverages. There may be co-payment involved or deductibles involved for those people. So are we eliminating any co-payments or deductibles that they would be required under their health insurance policy?
Through the chair, Representative Talrico, no, we are not limiting the co-pays or changing co-pays with regards to this bill. We are instructing the department to change their plans with Medicaid recipients. That being said, it's not a change of who is covered for prescriptive contraceptives. It's only how much they can receive at one time.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That was the question that several people had approached about.
So just for clarity for myself, so if an insurer provides coverage for contraceptives, and we're talking oral contraceptives, then this bill will allow the recipient to receive a year's worth of coverage. If a insurer does not cover contraceptive, this doesn't change their insurance coverage.
To the chair, that is correct. Under the ACA, prescriptive contraceptives are required to be covered. So we are mandating coverage for prescriptive contraceptives. However, that is already covered through the ACA.
Okay, thank you. Are there further, is that clarification ample for everybody?
I'm trying to grasp it, Mr. Chair.
Well, are there further questions while Representative Alrico thinks about that one? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one question, and I think it was answered already, but I just want to ask again in public. That the length of prescription, currently if you go to a doctor and get a prescription, they will only prescribe as long as the insurance will sort of, they won't give you a year's prescription if insurance will only cover it for 3 months. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Wall, that is correct.
Okay. So I guess what this law does is allows insurance to cover for a year, which will then allow doctors to prescribe for a year. And if someone has a year prescription for oral contraceptive and it gets called into their pharmacy, they don't necessarily have to pick it all up at the full year. Can they go back and get a refill? They're not obliged. Okay, here's your box. But they don't have to get another prescription every 3 or 4 months. Is that how that may play out?
Through the chair, Representative Wall, the purpose of getting 12 months at one time would be actually for the insured to receive the full 12 months at one time in order to eliminate the need to go back to the pharmacy or hospital or clinic every 1 to 3 months. That being said, if that person, for some reason thinks that she doesn't want the full 12-month supply at one time, it's perfectly acceptable for them to only receive the 3 months or 1 month at one time.
Representative Wall.
Thank you. Okay, that makes sense. Or if they're moving from one city in 6 months, they might get 6 months. But as it currently stands with the law, would they have to get a new prescription in 3 months currently? And they would just, and it's not just they would have to go to the pharmacy after 3 months. They would have to actually go to the doctor also? Or can a doctor have a year-long prescription that can only be filled on a three-month interval?
Through the chair, Representative Wall, currently the doctor can prescribe, just like a refill, you can go back every 3 months, but you would have to go back every 3 months for your refill is how it would currently work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a little follow-up.
Representative Clayman.
I think unrelated to this bill, through the chair to Representative Wall, I think as a practical matter, if I go to the doctor with a prescription for a 12-month prescription and I go to the pharmacy and only fill it for six, I can't go back to the pharmacy 6 months later and say, don't you have that old prescription I brought you 6 months ago? Can you fill me the second half? If I choose to only fill the only 6 months of the 12-month prescription, when I go back to get the next 6 months, I either have to have a new prescription or I have to call the pharmacy and say, can you renew this prescription number? And they may have to call the doctor, and the doctor may say, sure, but I don't think the pharmacy keeps track of the remaining months. At least that's been my experience at the pharmacy counter.
Are there any further comments? Did anyone have any questions for the Ledge Legal or anybody? No.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee adopt HB 344 version 29-LS1409/P as the working document.
I believe.
Cancel that.
Yeah, 345. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the committee substitute for House Bill 345, version 29-LS1503/H from committee, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 345, committee substitute for House Bill 345, version H, will pass from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And we will take just a moment before we sign the paperwork, and we'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record, and we have before us House Bill 334, Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill number 334, version 29-LS1409/P, as our working document.
And I'll object for discussion of the changes. And would you, staff, come forward and put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Crystal Keenum, and staff to Representative Munoz. Version P is an updated version from version E that was adopted yesterday. After committee discussion, Ledge Legal took the recommendations from the committee yesterday and incorporated those into version P. Ledge Legal is also on the phone if there are any additional questions from committee members. And I can walk through those changes in the committee substitute if you would like, or...
Yes, would you?
Yes, please. Absolutely. Section 1 of the bill, you'll notice, is a little different. There was intent language in Section 1 of Version E that has been removed since we are now keeping 2524-150 intact. So that intent language has been removed. Section 2 of the bill now includes the expanded definition that includes other parent, a child, or a domestic living partner. And so that was a conversation that was had yesterday for expanding upon that version. Then,
and that was, just for clarification, that was to make sure it covered children or domestic partners, so that if there were foster kids or et cetera. And
Linda Bruce, I believe, is online.
Yes. Linda, are you there? Ms. Bruce?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Thank you. We were just discussing a little bit the language there of the other parent, a child, or a domestic partner. And does that language, would that include a foster child?
No. Mr. Chairman, that language would include a foster child.
Okay. Are there any other questions on that clarification that the committee wanted to make? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Could you just point to where we were, because I was trying to compare the versions. I thought yesterday we were working off version N.
My apologies. You are correct. This new language is on page 2, line 2 of version P.
Okay. Thank you. I got mixed up there.
I had too many versions in front of me. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Crystal, would you go ahead and go? Thank you, Ms. Bruce.
The second change you'll find is on page 3 of version P. That language had said convicted of a crime involving domestic violence. This is regarding military personnel and the deployed person who's asking for custody to be to another family member. And this has been changed to clear and convincing evidence.
Okay, thank you.
The next change is on page 4, again, updating the language to clear and convincing evidence. At the bottom of page 4 in 2524-150C sub 6, there was a drafting error, and this language was reinserted that discusses the willingness and ability of each parent to facilitate and encourage a close and continuing relationship between the other parent and child. And the last changes are found in sections 8, both in sub M and sub N, and domestic living partner was included in those as well. So, and that is the extent of those changes.
Thank you, allowing a little reading time here.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. You know, again, we want to make sure that members are comfortable.
And I'll remove my objection. Are there further objections to the adoption of version P as our working document? Seeing none, we have adopted version P as our working document. We have available Nancy Mead, I believe. Yeah, hiding there. Linda Bruce and Margaret Brody is also available for questions if the committee has any questions. Are there any further questions? Representative Talreek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how difficult this might be, but it'll certainly clarify things for me. And a good example is in Section 2 on line 15, we've had a language change, and it says a history of perpetrating domestic violence. I don't know if anybody can give me a very clear, concise answer on this, but can history be one event?
Page 1, line 15, on the P version.
Representative Tallarico, through the chair, in speaking with both the courts and the judges, our understanding of history is it's the discretion of the judge to determine that history. With this removal, because in the prior version and in statute, it defines what history is. Current statute defines history as one serious incident of domestic violence or two or more incidences of domestic violence. We are removing that language. We're leaving the discretion up to the judge. And the thought is to have the judge determine if it's a one-off incident or, you know, those two surrounding a specific case of a bad breakup or something, or if there is truly a pattern and a history, and leaving that discretion to the judge.
Representative Talreek.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure we got that on the record so that people understand that if someone has a violent outburst, which I don't mind saying I am completely, I have a zero tolerance level for that entirely. And so if that happens, I just want to make sure that the judicial discretion allows them to say that, no, this is your history. You know, we don't have to build a long case of violent behavior against you. You know, if a person really is dangerous, that... Or they put other people in peril, that the judge has the ability to say, this is your history. And so I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And just to reiterate, I think that seeing some nods around the table, we want to make sure the legislative history shows that that's the will of the committee as well. Is there any objection to that? No, huh? Seeing none, just to make sure that we had the committee structure and not just a single member's voice.
Absolutely.
Are there any other questions? Let me get my staff to go out. We also have a letter to send along with the bill to judiciary that we have some bullet points to. This is not going to be an official letter, but a letter from our committee to their committee, because we don't have it written up in final form, so otherwise we won't include it as part of the bill package. But the members wanted to point out to the Judiciary Committee that we had some concerns about a number of legal issues, and so this is just pointing out those legal issues that we would like Judiciary, in addition to anything they see, address from our standpoint. So would you identify yourself and give us a rendition of the bullet points?
Sure. For the record, my name is Tanika Hansen, staff to Representative Seaton. So the first point we have on here is a question of should we remove the rebuttable presumption entirely or look at adjusting the standards. The first version of the bill left the presumption in but required a conviction. This standard or this version removes the rebuttable presumption but requires a much lower standard, clear and convincing evidence, because there was concern over conviction being too high. So it perhaps should be an ongoing discussion as to whether removing the rebuttable presumption entirely is what we want to do, as we are in the current version, or if we might want to look at it just to see if we could narrow that presumption down a lot more but keep it in, just as a point of discussion for the next committee. And under the newest draft of 334, so we've removed the presumption and then changed the burden of proof for the judge to consider domestic violence from any evidence of domestic violence to clear and convincing evidence, which is a term that members have seemed to be comfortable with. But just to point out that by changing that in the sections that the judge may consider, as well as removing the rebuttable presumption, it's changing the required evidence. And then we had some questions around the protective orders, whether the short-term protective order can be considered under a history of domestic violence, and how easy those short-term orders are to get. Is there a court finding of evidence first, or is it something that can be put forward fairly quickly? There was also interest in knowing how often the rebuttable presumption is asked for, how often it is applied. There were questions about how available the batterers intervention programs are, which are required under current statute, because it seems like they might not be very available. And a question of how many supervised visitation programs are there available for parents who can't find a friend or a family member to do that visitation for free. And if there are other points the committee wants considered, we would include them in the letter as
well. And Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the short-term protective order, how often are the short-term protective orders approved and how often denied? I think that's necessary because one of the suggestions that's been made in advocating for this legislation is that they're given out too frequently. So I think it'd be instructive for the committee to look into that matter and really be able to flesh out that question. And then this was somewhat addressed by including language that says in the newest version, just need to find it here, domestic living partner in a couple of areas, but I think that's something that they should just look at a little bit more is the blended families. And I think when we talk about a certain time frame, that can be, as I thought through it a little bit more, in a blended family, that might be a little more challenging mm-hmm. because, you know, what things that happen in one relationship or family situation may not happen in another, you would hope. But just how does the setting time limits impact that? So those were two immediate things I wanted to make sure were considered.
Are there any other points that committee members would like to have judiciary aware that we were concerned with but we didn't really have the expertise in this committee to deal with? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess and this may not be the exact right time to say this, but I'm really struggling with this bill and sort of the implications of it. But when I think about what our committee should focus on, sort of the public health matters of our state, I just want to make sure that, you know, it's clear that our committee thinks that domestic violence is a serious public health issue that warrants a great deal of attention and additional programmatic, you know, work and things to address that issue. And so, you know, if the committee chooses to move the bill today, me not stopping it isn't, you know, an indication of support at this time. But I feel like, you know, it's moving beyond, as you stated yesterday, you know, us getting out of the public health realm and more into, you know, applications of the law and how it would be applied by judges. And that certainly is beyond what we we are prepared to talk about. So I wouldn't want anyone watching this committee or seeing the bill move to think that that was some indication that we didn't take seriously the real problem and public health issue of domestic violence in our state, but that it's more things that are beyond our purview need to be addressed by the next committee, and we will be watching and learning as they address the bill.
Thank you on that. And I would like to just say that, you know, I think the committee has done an excellent job having a bill come to our committee and refining it so that it was not overly broad in a way that could have, in some circumstances, negatively affected domestic violence, or could have been that it would, in some circumstances, interpreted that domestic violence wouldn't have received the same closer scrutiny. And so I think the committee has done really good work on that. So I think we are addressing the that question that you're talking about from that standpoint. Are there other comments? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Identify
Crystal
yourself.
Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Munoz. We also, Representative Carr, we also feel that way. We understand that domestic violence is a very emotional and hard discussion to have. And the laws governing this are not easy. We want that extra review in the Judiciary Committee, and we know there are additional concerns that need to be worked out, and we welcome those discussions, and we welcome both sides, you know, to kind of come together to craft really good legislation and protect victims and children, and that's what we're after.
Are there any further committee discussion, comments on the bill? Representative Talrico?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for House Bill 334, version 29-LS1409/P, from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
And I'm going to object for a moment, and we'll take it at ease. Representative Vasquez wanted to come in, and so we'll be just a moment off the record. Let's back into order. We had before us the motion to move CSHB 344 version P from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations, and I had objected, and Representative Tarr.
Mr. Chairman, I either heard you wrong, or I thought you said 344. Instead of 334?
I might have misstated. It is House Bill 334, version P. Thank you. Is there any other comments? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection to moving House Committee Substitute for House Bill 334, 29-LS1409/P from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes? Seeing none, the bill moves, and we will thank the sponsor for coming forward and with the bill, and it will go to Judiciary along with the letter that will be drafted on our bullet points that we talked about today, and we will send, before we send that letter to the committee, we will send it to all committee members so they can see the letter of the points that we're wanting the Judiciary Committee to consider as the bill goes forward. So with that, I believe we didn't have anything. Is there anything further come before the committee today? Seeing none, we will be adjourned at 4:12.